Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, Mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law.
Got miles to go before we sleep.
Lawman is putting an end to my running, and I'm so far from my
home. We will not go gently. We're going to unleash hell here in December.
Oh, Mama, I can hear you a-crying. You're so scared and all alone.
Hey, somebody fix this guy's buckle. I'm going to play football.
He's coming down from the gallows, and I don't have very long.
Ladies and gentlemen of Steeler Nation, welcome back to another episode of The Standard is the Standard, Behind the Steel Curtain's flagship podcast. I'm Jeff Hartman, editor of BehindTheSteelCurtain.com, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Lance Williams. How are you this evening, Lance?
Doing great, Jeff. Glad to be back for another week talking about Steeler football. Let's go.
Hey, and we have a lot to talk about. We have plenty to talk about in terms of the Bengals game that happened last week. A lot of stuff happened today in terms of players running their mouths, and this is strictly between the Steelers and the Bengals. We've got a lot to talk about with the upcoming matchup against the Raiders, the importance of this game for the Pittsburgh Steelers in terms of their playoff chances, first half of the season grades. You name it, we're going to be talking about it. And if you want to call in, feel free to. You can 347-850-8581. That's 347-850-8581. We already have a caller. I think you know who it is, Lance. Let's get our friend Vito from New Jersey on the air. Vito, how's it going, bud? Oh, we lost Vito. We lost Vito. I can't believe it. He'll call back. I know he will. And
even Vito turned it over? Wow. Vito turned it over. Wow. Vito turned it over on a phone call. Wow.
I think we have him back here. Let me see if I got Vito here. Vito, are you there?
That was a client of mine. He just keeps calling me and asking me the same thing over and over and over all the time.
You fumbled, Vito. Come on, man. Vito, you turned it over. Come on, man. Come on, Vito. You trying to be like Big Ben and turn it over and crunch it in clutch time?
I turned it over.
It's the fourth quarter, Vito. It's the fourth quarter, baby. You can't turn it over.
Turned it over. Well,
all right. What's up, Vito?
I think that article today made a lot of sense when you're looking at the mistakes that he made. And I think from what I gather, he looked like he was very frustrated late in the game. And there was no need to be because at the end of the day, they were winning that game. So all he had to do was play it safe. I think if he plays it and he just runs it or throws it away, there's a good chance maybe they win that game. Maybe they win that game by the score of 10-6. You never know. We don't know if the defense is going to even give up a touchdown because they played so well.
Well, at least in that situation, well, the one thing you know in that situation is you know if they don't turn it over, they're going to punt. So at least you're going to make Cincinnati play the long field. And in that situation, it was roughly around, 5 minutes? You know, you make them play the long field, and, you know, you reduce the game. You shorten the game that way. So, you know, maybe they do hold them because the defense was hot. But that second interception was bad. I mean, it was really bad.
That's a veteran guy. He shouldn't make that mistake.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, it was reminiscent
of a bad veteran throw. You know, that bothers me because you're a veteran guy. I mean, you've been in this league over 11 years. You're getting paid big bucks to not make those mistakes. And I understand quarterbacks make mistakes. I mean, look at Aaron Rodgers the other night. They held them to, 60 yards total? But he didn't lose that game with mistakes. He lost that game because he just couldn't do anything. So, I mean, do we make – you assume and just say that it was a bad game for him?
Oh, it, hands down, that was a bad game, Vito. And I think that if you ask anybody, and Ben Roethlisberger included, he'd be the first to tell you it was a bad game. And I think that you can't – and we have to keep in mind also, and I'm not going to say anything about him coming off of injury because it is what it is. If you're going to put him on the field, you expect him to perform. I realize that. But at the same time, he's a guy that tries to make plays. And I think the article you're referencing was our film room breakdown of each of his interceptions today. And I wrote that article.
Great.
And I think that what you see with Ben, and it's exactly what I stated in the article, is that you hear all the time, that's us Ben being Ben. That's just that's what Ben Roethlisberger does. I mean, a smart quarterback or smarter quarterback, let's say Aaron Rodgers, in that situation, he wouldn't have thrown that pass. He would have scrambled for a first down, slid, and then moved the chains. Roethlisberger even said on his weekly radio his radio segment on 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh that in hindsight, yeah, he probably should have either thrown it away or run the ball, but that's just not his game. And I think that sometimes you just have to take the good with the bad, and that's unfortunately the bad. This is the first time in a long time that he has had three interceptions in a game. I can't say that I think this is an ongoing trend, not after 2014 and not after the way he started 2015. Was it a bad game? Yes. Did it cost him a game? Certainly. But is it a sign of doomsday prophecies to begin with Ben Roethlisberger? No. Every player has a bad game. I don't think it's time to push the panic button for the Steelers, even especially Ben Roethlisberger, because he's a great quarterback. He should bounce back. I think there's no doubt about it that he'll be back in form for next week's game against Oakland because they're going to need him to play well. That's a big game for them. So I don't know if that answers your question, Vito, but I don't have any qualms about Roethlisberger moving forward.
Let me ask you this. Last year when they played the Jets, remember he came off of that hot streak where he threw 12 TDs and then he looked horrible when they were in New Jersey playing the Jets? He had one of those bad games. So that reminded me of one of those same games when you look at it. So is that the defense? What do you guys think?
When you look at Ben, I mean, Ben's not a week-to-week guy. A week-to-week guy is, you know, Colin Kaepernick. That's a week-to-week guy. Where you have no idea what the offense is going to look week in, week out. Ben Roethlisberger is an elite premier player, and he just didn't perform well. But like Jeff said, once you step on the field, you're going to be judged, and your play is going to be graded, so you have to perform. And he didn't play at a level that was good enough for the Steelers to beat the Bengals in a critical game at home.
Yeah, I mean, Ben Roethlisberger is Ben Roethlisberger, and people forget, you know, Vito, you even brought it up. I mean, you said the Jets game last year, he had just come off of throwing 12 touchdowns in 2 weeks. He's very capable. He's more than capable. Was he healthy enough to play? I think that if you watch the film again, and even on those three plays that we illustrated on BehindTheSteelCurtain.com, he was mobile. He was able to get out of the pocket. Was he as mobile and as fast or as quick as he normally is? Well, no. He has a knee brace on. He's obviously feeling that pain. But at the same time, he was well enough to play. He just didn't play up to par. But hopefully, fingers crossed, Ben Roethlisberger will get his ducks in a row. And I think that with the onus more on him now, with Le'Veon Bell being out of the lineup, you'll see a much more prepared, a much more balanced attack, standard operating procedure so much with leaving the running back in the backfield. And we're going to talk about that today as we prepare for the Oakland Raiders coming up this week. Vito, as always, thanks for the phone call. We appreciate it. What a great caller. What a great listener. Vito, we appreciate it as always. Let's talk about the Bengals game a little bit. Lance, I do the post-game show, the Steelers final score for the website with Chris Carter, and we talked ad nauseum about the game, but I want to get your just kind of your knee-jerk reaction. I know you watched the game more than once. I know you watched the All-22 and all that good stuff. What was your takeaway from the game? Because I kind of have some, after watching the game again, I kind of have some thoughts and about certain aspects of the game. What was your thoughts? What were your reaction to the game?
I agree with Jim Wexel's column that I read earlier. I thought largely the offense was really impacted by Le'Veon going out. I thought they had started to get the running game cooking. When he went out with the injury, the Bengals did a really good job of handling the Steelers' run game with only seven and not having to commit a safety. And I thought the offense was a little impatient in trying to force deep chunks. But I think a lot of that reverted to that is because Le'Veon was out and you can't matriculate the ball downfield attacking the flats with Le'Veon. I would think moving forward that Marcus Wheaton might occupy some of that in the offense moving forward. I think also when you look at the Steelers' offense, I think what we're seeing is that the Pouncey injury, although I think it was minimized to a certain extent in comparing it to Le'Veon Bell or Ben Roethlisberger, but they're having some offensive issues, I think, because that center position is not stabilized. I think Wallace is doing an admirable job. There are some protection breakdowns. There's some breakdowns in the running game that show up in bad situations when he's playing. So I think had Bell been able to play, I think you would have seen a more balanced game plan, because they did a really good job to Bengals stuffing that run after he went out. On the defensive side of football, the defense played probably one of its best games. Not its best game. The Rams game, in my opinion, was its best game because they closed that game out. I thought the adjustment of putting McClendon at defensive end was really good. He was hot. I thought McCullers played well. The front seven played well. I thought even the back end held up, and oft-criticized Antoine Blake even showed up with a critical interception. The coaches do know something. Riddle us that, listeners. The coaches kind of do see these guys practice, and not saying that the coaches can't be criticized, but maybe he solidified why he should be the corner. Unfortunately, in echoing Cameron Hayward's sentiments, the defense has to close that game out. You know, the defense didn't play well enough ultimately for them to win, nor did the offense, nor did special teams, nor did the coaching staff. But it was a highly, you know, a well-played game, I thought. You know, a little bit sloppy with the penalties, but the physicality of the game was definitely there. Steelers just came up short, man. And those turnovers in the fourth quarter were killers, and you're going to lose two games in a row when you turn over the ball six times. That's point blank. Clean up the turnovers, clean up some of the penalties, and give yourself an honest chance of trying to win a football game. At 4-4, there's still a lot of football left, tough loss. You know, I think the Steelers will play better this Sunday against the Raiders.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm glad that you brought up the offensive line, because that's kind of what I took away. If you watch that game, and even when Le'Veon Bell was still in the lineup, the offensive line really was not protecting Roethlisberger very well. When he got the ball out of his hands, and I'm talking about those three-step drop turn firing at Antonio Brown or to Martavis Bryant on those slant routes, then that was working, but that's going to work against any pass rush. However, when you looked at his time that he had in the pocket, everyone points to, yeah, there were moments where he had all day. Well, that's going to happen, but there were also times, including the third interception, which was diagrammed in that article that Vito referenced, he didn't even have time to plant his left leg, which equated to the high throw and equated to basically the game-clinching interception for the Cincinnati Bengals. The offensive line, everyone talks about Alejandro Villanueva. I thought he did a great job. I mean, again, remember, this guy's a backup. And Cody Wallace, he has a little bit more of a pedigree, and I don't mean from a draft standpoint, but from an experience standpoint. He's struggling at the center position, but then again, replacing Marquise Pouncey is not easy in terms of production. Alejandro Villanueva is doing, I think, a solid job. I mean, he gave up, I want to say, one hurry or one quarterback hit, and he did his job. And I think the Steelers' offensive line is going to benefit from letting D'Angelo Williams still run the football, because if they get away from that just because Le'Veon Bell's not in the lineup, it's going to make them so one-dimensional, and it's going to get rid of the balance that you referenced, and it's going to make Ben Roethlisberger a sitting duck against some of these teams that can really pressure the quarterback. Hello, Khalil Mack is coming to town. So with that being said, I hope that D'Angelo Williams, because he proved he throws the burst, that 55-yard run was a beauty. He sees the field well. He just doesn't have that patience that that Bell has. And you hear Ramon Foster say that sometimes Bell's running style was frustrating for offensive linemen because they have to hold their blocks a little bit longer. Well, now with D'Angelo Williams, maybe that's not the case. Maybe they're able to just fire off the ball. They know where he's going to go. He's going to see the holes. He's going to hit it. Now, here's a question for you. I know it's on the defensive side of the football. I know you like that side more than the offensive side, and it's basic. We saw Cam Thomas. I know he's your favorite player, and you have a 93 jersey in your closet. But we saw Cam Thomas, basically his snap totals go from about 25 to 30 against Kansas City down to 13 against the Bengals in week 8. And the reason why is that they moved McClendon over to end. They put McCullers in nose tackle more often than usual, and they used McClendon as their second down lineman in their nickel package. What do you think about that? I know you mentioned that you thought they played well, but if you look closely, did you think that this could be I'm not going to say a permanent fix, but McClendon's contract is up after this year. If they re-sign him, do you think that versatility is something they're going to continue to use? Or do you think that once Tuitt comes back, it's going to be status quo, meaning McClendon and McCullers are your nose, and then obviously your ends are going to be Tuitt and Hayward with Cam Thomas and LT Walton basically swapping in and out in terms of anyone that needs a breather? What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's going to continue what we saw, especially with Tuitt coming back off the knee, maybe not being in the best shape and the knee still being an issue. I think you're still going to see McClendon play some defensive end. I think Cam Thomas is not going to be in the plans, especially in this game coming up Sunday. The Raiders run a lot of power, and we'll talk some about that when we break it down. Having a big body like McCullers in the middle will be beneficial in trying to plug up those runs that they'd like to get in the A-gap. So you're going to see more of McClendon play end and play the nose. And I think his versatility will serve him well. I mean, what we're seeing and what we saw in this game, we're starting to see in the NFL this year is that, you know, there are some good defensive lines. And when the defensive lines cook in these games, they really get after these offenses. And that was evidenced in the game of Denver against Green Bay. You know, when you see a hot offensive line play, a hot defensive line playing really well, you know, how it really impacts an offense regardless of who the quarterback is. So I think the Steelers won't be trying to get rid of a defensive lineman that they think they can play. I think you'll see them even more aggressive moving forward, trying to bring in more guys with versatility so that defense can do even more things.
Yeah, I think that what you said was absolutely right about Cam Thomas, and most would certainly wonder why he's even in the discussion right now in terms of playing time because, well, he just gets pushed around a lot. However, I think that McClendon's versatility and that he showed was definitely something that helped that defensive front against the Bengals rushing attack, which was pretty darn good. Giovanni Bernard was averaging almost 5 yards a carry, and they stifled him pretty much for the entire game. Jeremy Hill had some decent runs, but nothing that was backbreaking. And I think that Daniel McCullers, I wouldn't say a coming out party like Ryan Shazier had in week 2, but at the same time, I think that McCullers, I noticed him on the field. Let me just say that. I noticed him. And me, when you notice a player like a nose tackle, well, it reminds me of Casey Hampton. You used to notice Casey Hampton on the field. So I think that's good. I think it's really good about his progression because he's been criticized a lot. And so McCullers, a lot of people picture him as the future of the nose tackle. Is that what you see him as?
I do. One issue with him, though, is he at times his pad level is a touch high. And I think what he has to work on is consistently playing with good pad height. Once he gets those pads down consistently, I think he could be a dominant player. But you see him running the line of scrimmage as well, showing lateral quickness, which I didn't think we'd see the big man be able to do. So it's good to see these young players emerging and playing critical snaps in big ball games.
Yeah, absolutely agree with you. Now let's move on to something that doesn't have anything to do with the actual game itself, although it does in a way, and we're going to talk about Le'Veon Bell's knee injury. Now Le'Veon Bell on a first down play catches a pass out of the backfield. He is tackled rodeo style, essentially, by Vontaze Burfict, who is a very controversial player for the Cincinnati Bengals, who had just come back off his own injury against the Steelers in Week 8. If you watch the way that he kind of torques his body to bring Bell to the ground, Bell's knee gets caught up underneath him, and next thing you know, pop, there goes the MCL, there goes Le'Veon Bell's season. It doesn't end there, though. If you watch the film, you see Vontaze Burfict get up quickly. He leaves the screen very fast, as if he's sprinting towards his bench. And reports are, and I have not seen a view of this where I could see him actually do this. Maybe you have, Lance, but reports are from several players that he ran to the bench and was basically celebrating, watching Bell lay on the ground, writhing in pain. And that is obviously going to stir up some emotion amongst the Pittsburgh Steelers, especially those that were there, that saw it, that took offense to that. And today, earlier today, Vince Williams of the Pittsburgh Steelers, number 98, inside linebacker, he went on Twitter and basically, I'll paraphrase with you here, he basically sent a message. I don't think he tagged Perfect in the message personally. I'll have to go back and check. He basically said, look, next time I see this guy, even on the street, I'll make sure we make amends for what he did. And then Burfict fires back with, well, you know what, you know where I am, blah, blah, blah. Now we have Mike Mitchell and Myron Jones. Myron Jones is the guy that basically, well, he should thank Mike Mitchell for not decapitating him. If it were Ryan Clark in the secondary, I don't think he would even know what day it is. Ask Wes Welker what Ryan Clark does to players that get hung out to dry over the middle of the field, because Ryan Clark certainly knows how to lay the lumber, but Mike Mitchell does too, and he hit him square up in the gut. I'm sure you're familiar with the play, Lance. And then after the game, Myron Jones calls Mike Mitchell fake tough. Well, Mike Mitchell fired back today saying that, hey, if he would have known that, you know, he went over to AJ Green and said, you're next. If he would have known that Myron Jones was talking smack or was going to talk smack the way he was, or that Vontaze Burfict was going to gloat like he did with Le'Veon Bell's injury, he would have taken a shot at his head or his knee. Very general question for you, Lance, is what are your thoughts on all this trash talk? Do you like it? Do you think it's kind of sophomoric? Or do you like, you know what, this is that fuel to the fire, and this is kind of turning into Ravens Steelers. What do you think?
Well, Bungle Steelers will never be Ravens Steelers. It doesn't matter. They could go 16-0. Bungles versus Steelers will always be Bungles versus Steelers. There will never be a Bungles week in Pittsburgh. That's one. Two, to the victor go the spoils. You know, once they beat you, they can pretty much say anything they want. I'm not saying you should gloat about injuring a guy, and I typically watch the games on the 30-minute cut-ups that the NFL provides through NFL Mobile, so I don't really see all that. They showed the play so fast. Was Le'Veon, I couldn't tell. But did he put some hot sauce on the tackle, meaning did he add a little extra to the end of the tackle, a little extra tug or a yank? Did he do that with the tackle? Is that what the Steeler players are upset about?
What he did was not abnormal in today's NFL. Basically, there were two players there. They both made contact with Bell. You watch Perfect, he kind of leaves his feet to kind of bring Bell down with all of his body weight. And the injury didn't happen because of that. The injury happened because Bell's foot got tangled up underneath him, and then when he went down with Perfect's weight on top of him, it just made it that much worse. People, I don't think even players had an issue with how he tackled him. It was how he celebrated after seeing Bell go down. And a lot of people said, well, he was just celebrating the play. Well, he tackled him for like a 7-yard gain on first down. Like, who's going to celebrate that? That doesn't make any sense. So, you know, it is what it is. But does that change your view at all of it?
Well, as they say, let it do what it do. If they want to take it to the streets, take it to the streets. Where can I get a ticket? Like I said before we started the show, I bet you it's better than the 80 to 90 bucks we all paid for Pacquiao versus Mayweather. So let it do what it do, and there's another football game in Cincinnati. So, hey, either keep it on the field, take it to the streets, whatever it is. One thing we do know is the next game in Paul Brown, I think it's Paul Brown Stadium, that's what it is down in Cincinnati, I think.
Yes.
It's going to be extremely physical, and I'm going to guarantee you that game is going to mean something, particularly for the Steelers and their playoff run. So that's going to be a hard-hitting affair. And let's see some Joey Porter. Let's see some pulling the shirt up, showing your abs, going to the middle of the field, turn the cameras off, and let's get busy. So hey, let it do what it do. It's a violent game, and these guys do violent things on the field. So, hey, the response is going to be a violent one typically.
Yeah, and you know what? I don't mind it at all. The only thing that I mind is that sometimes when you're on the losing end of that game, you kind of sound like you're crying over spilled milk and you got some sour grapes. And that's what I don't like about some of the comments that were made. But at the same time, I really do appreciate Vince Williams for a couple reasons. And if you check the website, if you're listening live, I recommend you go to behindthesteelcurtain.com right now as you're listening even and check out the article. Vince Williams himself reached out on his verified Twitter account to me on our Behind the Steel Curtain Twitter handle that I run, and he essentially gave us a statement. And this is what I appreciate about Vince Williams, because he wanted to kind of clarify things about the whole Vontaze Burfict threat that he gave on Twitter. He didn't back down from what he said. You know, most of the time players release a statement, it's like, oh, okay, well, I'm sorry I didn't mean it, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's all a heat of the battle. No, Vince Williams basically said, look, you're going to celebrate after you hurt one of my friends, one of the guys that I consider a brother. I'm going to take umbrage to that. And you know what? What's going to happen is that if I see you again, I'm going to make sure that you remember it. And I like that. I like that about the Steelers. I like that about how past players have been like that. This reminds me of Joey Porter getting into a fist fight in Cleveland before the game and getting ejected. This reminds me of Joey Porter going onto the team bus of the Baltimore Ravens trying to get Ray Lewis. This reminds me of Hines Ward and Ed Reed. Hines Ward just going out of his way to clean Ed Reed's clock out in the secondary. I enjoy this part of the game. And there are probably people that say this is juvenile. These guys need to channel their aggression other ways. Well, guess what? They play an aggressive sport. And they play a sport where you get paid sometimes to go out and hit the other guy and clean his clock. So I actually like this. And Lance, you know, I think you were right. Let's channel our inner Joey Porter. I think Joey Porter needs to give the team the speech, the prep speech, you know, the motivational talk before they play on December 13th in Cincinnati. If that game is going to be ugly, this stuff might die down for a few weeks, but you better believe that if the Steelers need that win and if the Bengals are at home, that game is going to be amped up to 10. No doubt about it. I'm excited for it already. I think the Steelers are going to be looking for revenge on so many different levels. It should at least make it interesting. I don't know. It should be fun. It should be fun. I'll put it that way. And is there anything you want to say any more about the Bengals game before we kind of put it in the rearview mirror and look forward to the Oakland Raiders?
Got to move forward to the Raiders. Got to get this one game. You know, this game is more important than the last one because you can't play the last one over again. So bring on the Raiders. And plus, it's a little personal for me because I'm surrounded by Raider fans because you guys, if you don't know, I'm on the West Coast. I'm in the Bay Area. I'm in the Oakland area every day. And I hear silver and black, and I hear Raiders. I hear that all the time. So I'm tired of it. Hopefully the back and gold can slap those boys up. Because I'm tired of going to see the Steelers lose against the Raiders every time they're out west as well. It's utterly frustrating. So hopefully the Steelers can have a positive outcome this Sunday in Pittsburgh.
Well, you know, it is true because the Steelers have lost four of their last five games against Oakland. The only game that they won, if you remember, was at Heinz Field. I want to say it might have been 2012. And it was the year that, or it might have been earlier than that. CC, if you're listening, if you can check that. That was when Richard Seymour punched Ben Roethlisberger in the face, after throwing a touchdown. He was ejected from the game, and it was basically a rout. Other than that, this team hasn't beaten the Raiders in their last five meetings. You go back to Bruce Gradkowski's incredible comeback at Heinz Field when he was with the Raiders. You go back to Terrell Pryor, his 93-yard touchdown run, and oh, my gosh, it still makes me angry. You name it. They had all these weird plays. Darius Hayward-Bey even made a big play. It's just one of those teams where you have to wonder, does this team just have something about them? All those teams were bad. Those Oakland Raiders teams were bad. I don't care what you say. They were horrible. So now you have a good Raiders team coming into town. They're 4-3. They've got the, as they're calling it, the AC-DC connection. They're talking about Amari Cooper and Derek Carr. And you have all these players that all of a sudden now they have some youth, they've got some veteran experience, like Charles Woodson. And this game is very, very important for the Pittsburgh Steelers. At 4-4, they are on the outside looking in currently behind the New York Jets and the Oakland Raiders at 4-3 in terms of that last playoff spot, or the two playoff spots, the wild cards. And the Steelers, here's the caveat that most people are forgetting. They have a horrible conference record. They've only won one game in the conference. And because of that, this head-to-head win over the Raiders could be huge if they're able to achieve it. The Raiders don't typically play well coming to the East. I think they beat the Cleveland Browns earlier this year as their first win on the East Coast at a 1 o'clock start in a long, long time. They're going to have to do it again. I want to talk about some keys to victory. Do you want me to go first with offensive keys, or do you want to go first with defensive keys, Lance?
Go ahead and kick it off, Jeff. Kick it off, baby. Kick it off.
All right. I think that the offense is where we need to start because it's going to be the most important aspect in this game, especially based on the fact of how they played against the Bengals in Week 8. The offense is going to have to stay balanced. D'Angelo Williams is more than capable. And you know what? I'm okay with Jordan Todman getting the football. He has proven that every time that he's been on the field, whether it's special teams or whether it's running the football against the 49ers, he got some time at the end of the game. He runs hard. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. I want to see them stay balanced even without Le'Veon Bell because that's what they need to do to keep Ben Roethlisberger upright. Now, in the passing game, it becomes very simple. You need to keep those timing patterns to a minimum, but you can't just have Heath Miller being used over the middle of the field. The Bengals ran too deep almost the entire game, and the Steelers seemed convinced that they could still beat the two deep safety looks regardless, and it never worked. Ben Roethlisberger did not complete one pass over 20 yards to the air, and that was troublesome. So the Steelers need to stay balanced. They need to work those shallow crossing routes that are so successful with guys like Martavis Bryant and Antonio Brown. But ultimately, it's going to come down to the red zone. The Pittsburgh Steelers against the Bengals had every opportunity to win that game. They were given great field position on more than one occasion and squandered every single opportunity. And if you want to win games that are huge, if you want to win games at home, if you want to make yourself an AFC contender again, when you get in the red zone, you answer with 6 points and not three. I think that the Steelers' red zone, their third down efficiency, I'll tie that in there, combined with staying balanced and working those short passing routes to set up the deep play, will be what will lead them to success. I'm not overly impressed with the Raiders' defense. I think that they're very vulnerable from top to bottom. It's just going to come down to whether Pittsburgh can just make the plays. That comes from the offensive line all the way to the quarterback, to the wide receivers. People forget, Ben Roethlisberger didn't get much help last week in terms of his receivers. Antonio Brown had a big drop. Martavis Bryant had two, although one was deflected. Still, some of those catches, some of the better wide receivers make, and that's what you expect out of your guys. I think those are the three main keys for the Pittsburgh Steelers entering this game. You have any comments on that for your defense, Lance?
Key in the game is you've got to get Mac and Smith blocked. If you don't get those guys blocked, your offensive game plan can be blown to smithereens, especially Khalil Mack. If you don't deal with Khalil Mack and handle him, whatever they try to do on offense will not be successful. It'll be intermittent. It'll be inconsistent because he's the type of player that can completely wreck your game plan. So I think they have to play close attention in getting him handled. I would suspect that whatever tackle, wherever he lines up, that tackle is going to get some help. But when you look at the Raiders, they play a lot of cover three, and they drop Woodson maybe 25 to 30 yards off the ball every snap. So there's a lot of room there, and typically you can attack cover one vertically because you only have one deep safety. So it's going to be interesting to see if they make Charles Woodson run and make him cover guys because, honestly, he sits back and he plays center field and kind of just surveys and makes plays. He's really playing like an Ed Reed-type center field, free safety, really a long way off the ball, just kind of orchestrating things on the back end. So it'll be interesting to see how the Steelers attack Seawood, the eventual Hall of Famer, in this particular game, but they've got to get Mack blocked, and they've got to get Mack and Smith blocked, but particularly they got to get Mack blocked. They have to do that. That has to be paramount in terms of this, the plays or the packages they put together in trying to attack the Raiders in the passing game.
What about defense? What do you got for us on defense?
Well, on the defensive side, what was the nickname you called Carr and Amari Cooper? What'd you call them? AMCD? What'd you call them?
No, ACDC, like the old, the 1970s, 80s, and 90s rock band. ACDC. I didn't create that. That's what they call themselves.
Oh, okay. See, I have more, you know, I have a more of a rap leaning. So instead of, you know, I call them the Killer C's. Yeah, the Killer C's, Carr, Crabtree, and Cooper. If anybody uses that, you heard it here first, it's the Killer C's. And this game is about how do you contain the Killer C's. Overall, when I look at this offense, they give you a lot of different things and a lot of different looks. One thing is you have to be very disciplined in how you rush Derek Carr because of his mobility. You have to almost treat him like a Russell Wilson, where you can't rush past him and open up running lanes because he will escape, run it, or move and deliver a strike with his arm because he has outstanding arm talent. He can make every throw, and he can throw with these weird different arm angles. So you have to be disciplined in how you rush him. Because they show you a lot of different zone read looks in the running game out of shotgun, you have to be disciplined with that as well. One thing I noticed is that he won't run it that much. Whereas when you face a Russell Wilson, it's truly a threat every time he does it, not so much with Derek Carr. And you have to stuff the run, but you really have to tackle this offense very well because they are absolutely lethal in the screen game. And when you look at Derek Carr, and this was a stat from last week, at the time going into the game, against the game against San Diego, 800 of his 1,460 yards passing were yards after the catch. They're probably the most lethal screen game in the NFL because 10% of the pass attempts that he makes are screens, and they've scored the second most TDs in screens. So you have to be able to tackle the catch. And, of course, you have to be able to tackle the stick mover, Crabtree, and you've got to be able to tackle the party crasher and Amari Cooper, 309 yards after the catch. If you watch the game against San Diego, I believe it was, where he took that screen back and he had two big runs where the passes were actually maybe five-yard passes, but he takes 75, 80 for a score. You really have to tackle the catch in this game. Because, you know, Crabtree is having a breakout year, 20th in the NFL on first down catches, 11th in the NFL on catches 25 yards or more. So those guys are really dangerous. But the other dangerous player that they have to account for, and it's not just the Killer C's, it's the Killer M's, they have to deal with Marcel Reese and Lartavius Murray. Murray's averaging 4.65 yards a carry, downhill runner. That's what I think McCullers will have a big impact. Not a lot of lateral agility, so he's not going to bounce it. But you got to wrap that guy up and tackle that guy. He's a physical runner who will break tackles and get those extra yards. And Marcel Reese is probably Carr's favorite target in the red zone. And they have number 88, I don't recall his last name, a rookie tight end. That's a big physical guy. That's like the tight end Green in San Diego. So these guys have a lot of weapons. But when you look at them over the last 2 weeks, the thing that glues it all together, and we were talking about it earlier in the show, is their offensive line. Their offensive line is playing really good football. So that defensive line of Pittsburgh Steelers is going to have to start hot, or it's going to be one of those slow deaths on offense with 1,000 paper cuts. Because they'll slowly matriculate down the field with this dink and dunk, small runs here and there, converting third down zone stuff, and then they'll get you in the red zone. So the Steelers have to tackle well and be very disciplined in this game, but particularly they have to stuff the screen play. That's the one play that they have to neutralize and take away and make Derek Carr beat them down the field.
Yeah, those are some really solid points. And the Oakland Raiders are not a joke anymore. I think a lot of people, when they looked at the schedule, they saw, well, they're the Raiders. That should be a win. Well, first, if you said that, you don't really realize the history between these two teams. And I'm not talking about the 70s. I'm talking about the stat of Steelers haven't beaten them last four of the last five games. But also, I think you look at this young talent they have, especially on that offensive side of the ball that you spoke of, and Carr and Amari Cooper, especially as those the primary, the marquee name, so to speak, on that offensive side. I think that the Steelers, though, the defense, could almost take a very similar approach to them that they did the Cincinnati Bengals. And correct me if you think I'm just completely off my rocker. Andy Dalton has that same mobility as Derek Carr does. Carr might be a little bit more mobile, but nonetheless, when you rush the quarterback, you have to stay disciplined. They have a running back, maybe not to the level of Jeremy Hill or Giovanni Bernard, yet they're still capable. And that's where you have to stop the run. You have to make them one-dimensional. I think the only difference is that although Andy Dalton makes mistakes, I think Derek Carr is very capable of making some really, really poor decisions considering how young he is and being, you know, in the NFL for such a little time. Would you say the comparison and the defensive approach would be very similar in terms of the weapons that the teams have, in terms of how Carr is sort of mobile like Andy Dalton, but between the last week and this week would be very similar?
Yeah, I think it is similar. And the reason why it is similar is because of Hugh Jackson. I mean, Hugh Jackson probably still has some influence with the Raiders because he's the former head coach and offensive coordinator. And, you know, he's currently the offensive coordinator in Cincinnati. So that's where you see some of the similarities. Although with Carr, I think he's a better deep ball thrower and has more arm talent than Andy Dalton. So I think with Carr, he can get you downfield a little bit better than Andy Dalton. But because of their offense, they're eliminating a lot of the mistakes that he makes because he throws the ball primarily short to intermediate level. And a lot of the big plays in their offense comes from yards after the catch. So they don't take a ton of chances with him, and that's why he has, I believe, 15 touchdown passes to only 13 picks. And he is consistently, he's getting good protection. So the Steelers are going to have to really be hot, literally. You know, that defensive line is going to have to come out and be hot, and they're going to have to apply pressure, because if they just let him do what he's comfortable with, they're going to move the ball up and down the field, particularly if the Steelers don't tackle really well in this ball game.
Yeah, this is a game where, if you ask me, I look at it and say, this is a game at Heinz Field. It's as big as a game as a Week 9 game can come, in my opinion, especially where the Steelers are at 500. They're the second game of a three-game homestand going into their bye week. This is a game that the Steelers need to come out and take a big lead. They need to score on the opening drive like they did against Cincinnati. But instead of stumbling their way after that, they keep their pedal down. They know what they're doing. They know how to attack this defense. And if you get up on this team, you're going to force them to become one-dimensional. We've talked about it with other teams that the Steelers have played this year. By the main team that pops in my mind is the 49ers in Week 2, where the Steelers got up to such a lead that, honestly, the Kaepernick and the 49ers had no choice other than try to throw the ball to get back in. And once they did that, Kaepernick was a sitting duck. I mean, that's when Shazier went off, Timmons went off. The defense has had a great game. So the offense can certainly help the cause more so than they have. And my last question to you, Lance, is a question that was asked to Ben Roethlisberger this week. It is about offense. And it was about their goal of scoring 30 points a game. Now, clearly they are far from that since Ben Roethlisberger is injured, but only putting up 10 points last week doesn't help that either. Ben Roethlisberger was asked if that's still the goal, and now that Le'Veon Bell is not in the lineup, and he said there's no reason why it shouldn't. Do you think it's an actual possibility for this team without Le'Veon Bell, the most prolific running back in the National Football League, to be able to put up 30 points a game on average? Now, let's say that that's lofty. I get that. But let's say even closer to that, close to 30 points a game. Do you think that's a possibility?
Not having the schedule at the top of my head, they play Seattle and they play Denver on the road. and they play Cincinnati again on the road. That's three of the eight remaining games. So I think it'll be very tough. I think the focus for the Steelers just simply needs to be playing consistent, turnover-free football and let it see where it goes from there. You know, right now, the offense just hasn't been consistent, and it makes sense why. Bryant hasn't been there for all the games. Bell played, what, six games? Now he's out. Ben didn't play for four games. Landry Jones played. Mike Vick played. They just have to concentrate and do their best in playing clean, turnover-free football. If they can do that consistently over the next eight, regardless of if it's 30, if it's 27, if it's 25, they're going to win football games.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. I think that this team could make a run if they do play some mistake-free football. Now, our producer, Chris Carter, who messaged me, said he's got some analysis on Carr of the Raiders, the quarterback. CC, you there?
Yes, I'm here, Jeff. How y'all doing?
Oh, great. Why don't you hit us with your facts.
All right, so I did some analysis on Derek Carr. We got a preview article coming out on the Raiders offense coming up in the next day or two with some film room on it. But looking at the guy does have impressive numbers on the season. He has 15 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. He's doing very well. But one thing I noticed is that a large majority, at least 9 of his passes that ended up being touchdowns, came from his first read, like from his primary read on a play, where he would stare down a receiver and just throw it up and let him go get it. And I'm not saying that makes him a bad quarterback, but one thing I noticed is that he made, you know, his interceptions came from when he had to start making those progressions. There were like 2 touchdowns where he did progress down the field and he did make those kind of plays that, you know, that you have to progress through a defense and make those kind of reads. But 9 of his 15 touchdowns came from just throwing it to the first person that he was supposed to look at and the defense not making a play on it. Then 3 of his other touchdowns came from what you guys are talking about, the screen plays or the huge yak plays. And even some of those first read touchdowns were also big yak plays. But one thing that I think the Steelers are really going to have to focus on is do what they were forcing Dalton to do and force him to have to go through his reads and make tough throws in coverage after going through a few guys. And then that'll allow the Steelers blitzers to be able to get through, force more pressure on it. Dalton's more used to the Steelers defense now that he's played against us for like 4 or 5 years now. I think he had a better chance to be able to dodge because he made some nice moves, I thought, against our pass rush that kept him alive sometimes. Carr has never seen us before, and I think that the big thing this week will be making sure that he has to make those reads. And I think if we do get that kind of heat and take away his first option on plays, then the Steelers will have a lot more sacks this week. So that's what I've been looking at as far as Derek Carr and the Raiders matchup.
Yeah, thanks, CC. We appreciate that. We're going to bring you back on here in a second to get your prediction for the game. Looking at Derek Carr, you know, you look at the games that he played this season, and I look at the defenses that he's going up against. Against the Broncos, he completed under 70%, threw for 249, 1 touchdown, 1 interception, 82.1 ranking. That's for the best defense that he's played. He played against the Cincinnati Bengals, 58.3% completion percentage. He threw for that wasn't a very good game in terms for him. I think he was injured in that game, but still, I look at Derek Carr, and it is interesting to see that the fact that, and Chris brought this up, that he's never seen the Steelers defense before. But let's be honest, there aren't many people that have seen Keith Butler's defense. What are your thoughts quickly, but now that gets brought up, on Butler's job and what he's done so far through the first half of the season with this defense? Because let's be honest, Lance, you and I both did not expect this out of the Pittsburgh Steelers defense, even at the end of the season, let alone through 8 games.
If there was an award for an assistant coach of the year or a coordinator coach of the year, Kevin Butler would get it. I mean, he's made this defense into a defense that you can win a championship with. because it generates enough pressure and enough turnovers and is solid enough in the red zone to be a championship-winning defense. And you don't have to have a defense like Seattle's once was or like Denver's currently is to win a championship. That's a luxury. And Denver is just swimming with defensive talent. Three outstanding corners, two pass rushers, and a well of defensive linemen. You don't have to have all of that. You have to have a defense that gets pressure, gets turnovers, and largely is solid in the red zone. If you have those three components, you can give up yards in the 20s. And that's kind of what defense is now. And the Steelers have that. But I will say, though, it's still not a defense that you can hang your hat that you're going to get that weekend and wake out, as evidenced by the performance against Kansas City. But it is still an emerging defense, and he's gotten a lot out of these young players. So, in my opinion, you know, if you could give an award for coordinator of the year, he would definitely get it.
I mean, he's done a great job, and I was fortunate enough the other night I was listening to Steelers Nation Radio, which if you don't know, if you have the Steelers app on your phone, whether you have Android or an iPhone, doesn't matter, you can listen to Steelers Nation Radio. And it was they were interviewing Sean Spence, and he talked about just some of the little subtle differences that Butler's making in terms of simplifying things for the younger players like Bud Dupree, making responsibilities much more understandable. It just seems like, you hate to use this word, but it just seems like he dumbed it down, and it's working. That's the thing. You know, Dick LeBeau's concepts were so out of this world, and Sean Spence talked about how when you showed up at OTAs, you had this book of blitzes that you had to memorize, and then every week LeBeau would draw up at least 2 to 3 new blitzes that you would have to know on top of all the other ones. He says very, very difficult. It doesn't seem like Butler's doing that as much, and it's working. So kudos to him. Now, with that being said, let's get to some predictions here where we have a few minutes left in the show. I kind of get a feel for who you're going to pick. I think everyone knows who I'm going to pick. But, Lance, I listen to your keys. I listen to how you talk about the upcoming game. I'm like, man, how's he going to pick this one? Because believe it or not, we do talk off the air. You haven't told me what your thoughts are on this game yet. You want to go first with me to guess who you're going to pick. I'll let you choose.
I'll go first. I think the Steelers are going to win this ball game, and I think they're going to win it pretty comfortably. And in fact, I think they're going to win by 10-plus points. And I think if they don't tackle well, it could be a difficult game. I think if they tackle well, that Cooper will get his stuff in spots, and so will Crabtree. And Crabtree's really playing good football. I think they will stone the Raiders' running game and really put the onus on this game on Derek Carr. But I think Mac will play well in spots. But I want to see Charles Woodson run. And I don't like the Raider corners and their secondary. Plus, the Raiders are terrible covering tight ends. I think after the two losses, particularly as painful as the loss was against Cincinnati, I think traveling east and playing a pissed-off team that just lost a game like that is going to be really tough on the Raiders. I think they are going to get the Steelers' absolute best, and I think the Steelers are going to put a three-piece on the boys and knock them out, and it's going to get ugly.
Wow. I have to say that I'm stunned. Not that you picked the Steelers. I was thinking you were kind of leaning that way. Of picking Pittsburgh in this game. I didn't think that you would go as far as saying that it might be, you know, a semi-blowout. I think that the Steelers are going to win as well. Did you give us a score? I didn't hear that. Did you give a score?
No. I'm thinking of a score. I'm going to go 35-21.
Okay. Oh, wow, 2 touchdowns. I like it. I think that the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to win. I know that the shockwave is going to send shockwaves throughout Steeler Nation tonight, but I think that you're going to see a better Ben Roethlisberger. I think that you're going to see a guy that's going to come out. He's going to exploit the weaknesses of the opponent, because I think sometimes, and Tomlin says this all the time in his press conferences, and it sounds so cliche and so coach speak, But it's true. Sometimes you have to tip your hat to the defense. And if you look at some of the plays that were made in that game in last week, Cincinnati's defense is good. And they're kind of the bend-don't-break mentality. But, boy, did they stood up when they needed to. And some of those were mistakes by the Steelers. But kudos to them for capitalizing on them. I don't see the same defense in Oakland. I think that the Steelers can move the ball. I think D'Angelo Williams could have himself a day, believe it or not, on the ground. I think I'm going to say D'Angelo Williams goes for over 100. I think Roethlisberger is going to be around 300. I think he's going to throw for two. I hope he doesn't get picked. I hope they stay mistake-free football. I think the Steelers win this game. Now, last week I said 34-31 Pittsburgh. I thought it was going to be a high-scoring game. Boy, was I wrong. I'm going to say this one is going to be a little bit slow starting, and then they're going to pick up in the second half. I'm going to go to say the Steelers hit their mark. They're going to have 30 points. Pittsburgh 30, Oakland Raiders 21. Okay, there we go. So Pittsburgh 30, Oakland 21. Now, with that being said, we'll bring our producer CC on to talk about his predictions for the game. Chris, what do you think?
Well, Jeff, I think, you know, as usual, the Steelers are going to win. I think it's going to be, like Lance said, it's going to be a three-peat. Steelers are going to come in knucking. I think that the Chiefs are going to come in and force. They're going to take away Latavius Murray because he is a bad dude, but I think they're going to be able to take him away. He'll get like 50, 60 yards. But the Steelers will do what they normally do. They'll be able to put, you know, they'll allow yards, but they'll be able to limit the Raiders to points. And I think one thing that they'll be able to do is force turnovers. Like I was talking about earlier, forcing Derek Carr to go through his reads and make decisions like that into tighter spots, that's going to be a key. And also getting pressure on Derek Carr. Their defensive front did a great job last week getting off the field on third down. I think they're going to be able to create at least three turnovers. I see them being a big time offensive game for them. Ben's going to be able to definitely play better. And don't sleep on D'Angelo Williams. He's definitely, now that he's going to be the man carrying the load, now I think that he's going to be that guy that just racks up a ton of yards. And I think he's going to get his 100 for the game. He might get a touchdown, but the story is going to be Ben Roethlisberger being back and picking the Raiders apart, and we're going to be seeing people on NFL Live the next day saying, oh, man, he's back. We never doubted him. But, you know, because people will think that he's off and he may be done now because he had one bad game off of an injury with one leg. But I see this being a beatdown. I'm saying 34-10 Pittsburgh. The Raiders are going to be brought down to reality and realize that, hey, you know, we still have a long way to go. They're a very talented team. They have a lot of youth on the team and a lot of good bright spots. But let's remember, you know, it takes more than just youth and talent on your team to make a good team. They're gonna have to go through their growing pains, and I think this week's gonna be one of them.
All right, very good. Now, Lance, don't go anywhere. We have a caller. Someone called in late, wants to talk about the upcoming game. Let's get this gentleman, Stephen. Stephen from Waynesboro, Pennsylvania. You're on the air with Jeff and Lance. Go ahead. What's up?
Hello. How are you guys?
How are you?
Doing good.
Good. Yeah, basically, I was just listening to the show and heard you guys' predictions and predicting a blowout. I don't really know if I see it, a blowout. I don't know. Like last week, basically, I think Bell's absent is going to affect this offense big time, especially in this upcoming game. Oakland is – they're ranked second in the NFL against the rush. So I don't see us really dominating on the ground with D'Angelo Williams. He's a good number two, but he – I don't know. He's not – I just don't believe that he can carry the rest of the load for the rest of the season. You know, they got peed. But, yeah, that Bell, it's going to hurt big time. But our defense is basically going to keep us in this game because Oakland – they got the ninth best offense in the NFL, total offense, with the 11th pass. And but their defense is atrocious, specifically their pass defense. They're 31st. So, you know, Ben, with another week at practice, should be able to get in rhythm with Antonio Brown and Bryant and create enough big plays downfield that it could potentially turn into a blowout, I could see. But just the way that they've been playing and struggling, I'm not banking on it. Basically, I guess Vegas has this the over under at 47.5. So that's like a, I don't know, I see like a 24-23 type game. Very close. I see it as a close game because Pittsburgh, to me, they can't close out games, man. They failed to show me yet that they can actually go in somewhere and really, I mean, yeah, San Francisco 49ers, Colin Kaepernick, come on, get real. Yeah, you're supposed to blow them out. But St. Louis, barely, I mean, I don't know. It's like we barely win. I see a close game. Yeah, Oakland's coming from traveling the whole way over here. That's a major advantage for Pittsburgh. And like you guys said, we have to win this game. Basically, this is almost a must-win based on Oakland battling for that one of those wild card spots itself. And, you know, or the head-to-head, that's going to be huge. So I don't know. Bell's going to really hurt this offense and being out. But Ben should be back on par. But I just got to see it. So, I mean, I'm wary of a blowout, but I just want to win the game, basically. That's basically what I got.
All right, Steven, thanks for the phone call. Appreciate it. Go ahead, Lance. What do you think about that?
You know, with our phone callers, I didn't know, at first I thought it was that guy, but then as he went on, I was like, you know, I'm like, wow, did the guy get us with like 2 seconds left? I mean, he's right. You know, the absence of Le'Veon is going to impact the Steelers defense, and the Raiders have been playing the run very well. You know, but the one thing about the running game is linebackers have to be accountable to the running game, whether it's working or not. You know, you have run fit responsibilities. So that's why play action passing works, whether you're running the ball well or not. It's because linebackers still have to react to the play action or run action. That's their responsibility in that play. So even if the Steelers don't run it well, they still have to stay committed. I think hopefully they won't run into a problem or a mistake of trying to throw it 45 times with Ben. Stay balanced, stay consistent, keep chopping wood, and watch those linebackers react. Plus, I think Heath Miller's going to kill their linebackers running the seam because they don't do a good job at all. And in fact, the tight end from Cleveland, I think it's Bundridge, I'm terrible with names. He had his coming out party against the Raiders, and he's been balling out ever since. So I still think their offensive weapons are good enough, even without Bell, to handle the Raiders.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that the interesting aspect of things, in my opinion, will be to see how Mike Tomlin and Todd Haley handle D'Angelo Williams for the remainder of this season. Now that he's the guy, and not just the guy for 2 weeks until Bell comes back, you have to wonder about his age. You have to wonder about how much wear he has on the tires. You have to wonder about whether they're going to spell him more than they did with Le'Veon Bell. I think it's a guarantee that you'll see him come off the field more. But until Isaiah Teed, who they just picked up from who's with the St. Louis Rams earlier this year in the offseason, until he is up to speed with the playbook and all the checks and all that stuff, you have to think that D'Angelo Williams is going to stay on the field for the majority of the time based on the fact that Todman, although I have confidence in him, I don't know if the coaching staff does, but that'll be interesting to watch. I think it is important to note, and Chris Carter is messaging me right now about this, is that people talk about the defense and the college, Steven, he did mention that the Raiders do have a ninth overall defense, that the Steelers have played the top three offenses. I'm sorry, the offense. He spoke about the offense. That the Steelers have faced the top three offensive units so far this season, and they've held all three of them statistically to their lowest point totals, and that's impressive. And that says a lot about the Steelers' defense. I like the Steelers' defense against the Raiders' offense, and I like the Pittsburgh offense against the Raiders defense. You add it up, and I think it equates to a Pittsburgh Steelers win. We hope so. Nonetheless, that's the show. We appreciate all the time that everyone has spent. CC for manning the phones. Lance, for your time as well. I know you're a little under the weather. I appreciate it. As always, be sure to check BehindTheSteelCurtain.com early and often for all your Pittsburgh Steelers needs. Chris and I will see you after the game on Sunday for the Steelers Final Score podcast. Be sure to check us out there. We'll see you next time, hopefully after a Steelers win. Bye.